Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Thank you, Katrina. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. As you know, this show is for all you performers and musicians and even comedians who are just trying to figure things out here in Music City.
Right.
Right.
Great. Now we're going to be the comedy.
Yeah.
Look, we don't have any answers. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are, but we are able to bring smart people into the building and talk to them and let them answer our questions and hopefully answer some of yours.
Yeah, and you can chime in by going to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow or, of course, Twitter @TheMusicRowShow and just throw us some questions and comments right there. Now, we've got a great, great show lined up for y'all tonight. We got songwriter and stand-up comedian Greg Hall hanging out with us here in the first hour.
That's right. Then we have hit songwriter Max T. Barnes coming into the studio to visit with us in hour two.
That's right.
For real this time.
That's right, right. Second time's the charm, right?
And that was all me. That was my fault.
So. Oh, a little snafu never hurt anybody.
Yes.
All right, Scott, why don't we get to it? Why don't you introduce this fine gentleman here?
I can't wait. You know, I'm always intrigued by songwriters and performers in town who look outside of the box to find a way to make music work for them. And,
right.
and Greg's been in Nashville writing and recording for years, toured with some huge acts over the past years, and has melded his performing and songwriting chops with stand-up comedy. He now headlines in top comedy clubs all over the country with his guitar strapped around his shoulder, sharing songs, laughs, and his own jacked-up brand of philosophy. this one I always like. He says, good things come to those who screw up. It's a pleasure to say, Greg Hall, we're glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Right.
It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, Greg, I don't think most songwriters realize just how dang hard it is to write a funny song. I mean, when did you figure out that you had a knack for it?
You know, tough question. I did the singer-songwriter thing for a long time, and I'm from Texas. And when I was growing up, we had a great scene in Austin, the Jerry Jeff and Fromm Holtz and Shake Russell and Rusty Weir and all that kind of stuff. And so I did the music thing for a long time, and I moved here after playing in my unfamousness, like 30 states in Europe. And I had entitlement issues. I didn't know how to play well with others. I mean, y'all say y'all stumble your way through the business so other people won't have to, you know?
Right, right.
Apparently I had fears of, you know, letting good things happen. And I didn't know how to co-write, or, you know, I wouldn't let myself do that. And so finally I felt like I was writing a book called Developing Unsuccessful Communication Skills Through Anger, Ego, and Entitlement Issues. And I had this little car wreck, and I just came back and I just said, man, I'm going to go do an open mic night and see what happens. And
meaning open mic comedy.
Yeah. Open mic comedy night. And,
that was here in town.
Yeah, that was here. And then just, started to understand what comedy was about and you know, went through, but what was the question?
Well, I mean, when did you start figure out that you had a knack for writing funny songs? Because that's actually harder than it looks.
When I was playing in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is the dairy farm capital, you know, of the world.
Right,
and
right.
I met a woman there who grew up on a dairy farm, and she was a dairy farm girl. So I wrote a song called Dairy Farm Girl, which I can't play here. But that was, it was utterly.
During the commercial.
Utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so that's when I knew that it was silly, and you know, it was that I could do that.
Okay, I'm going to back up a little bit because let's talk about those years when you were here writing. You win the prestigious Kennedy Center Award at the American College Theater Festival for Outstanding Achievement in Musical Composition.
Man,
that's a big deal. And then you quit school the next day.
Within a couple of days.
Within a couple of days. Yeah. Is it possible you missed the point of the award, and how did the family react to this decision?
So many missing points over the decades. you know, mom knew that it was going to be a tough road to hoe, and And but the first time as a singer-songwriter, when I got my name in the Dallas Morning News, they did a little thing like in 1990 or something.
Uh-huh.
And that's when mom and dad kind of went, okay, we can tolerate this.
We can relax a bit. But I mean, so you win this award and you were just like, okay, then this is what I want to do, right?
Well, I started, you know, because solo entertainers were really big in Texas at that time, mm-hmm. you know, in the early 80s and stuff. And so the next chore after winning that was just to learn 100 copy tunes, you know?
Right.
From Neil Young to Gordon Lightfoot to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer to, you know, just learning copy tunes over the years. And then there was this circuit in a number of states called Chelsea Street Pub. And they had solo entertainers, mm-hmm. but you had to do 4 45-minute sets a night,
mm-hmm.
6 nights a week, and then drive on Sunday and start all over Monday someplace else 6 nights a week.
Oh, and, wow.
And you had to hold the crowd.
That's brutal.
You know, and so you had to have a bunch of inclusion from the crowd and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that was, I kind of cut my teeth doing that. And then as you evolve learning all those songs, then you want to start writing your own things.
Was this like a restaurant type of place where people were eating? Or
yeah, it was a restaurant pub. And believe it or not, they were all in malls across America.
Of course.
I could go to Gainesville, Florida one week. And the first time I ever ate at a Cracker Barrel was... like 1988 in Memphis, Tennessee, they had the Mall of Memphis there.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine. And, but yeah, that was the very first time I'd ever seen a Cracker Barrel, you know, because I was from West Texas and it was like, what is this thing they call Cracker Barrel?
Well, you talk about inclusion in the crowd and what you mean there is you're singing all these cover songs, but you're like finding ways to put them into the songs just so they're still engaged.
Well, you get people at that stage, and remember, this is 25 years.
Right.
At that stage, you would either get them to sing along, or you'd have these games where, you know, the first one, you know, you'd have a table, put beers on their head or something, and say, you know, the first one who pulls the beer off their head and kills it will buy the table a pitcher or something. You know, just these kind of outlandish games to keep people there, and so that kind of gets you up on your chops as far as entertaining, because you know there were a couple of times early on where he called me and he said you gotta wake them up a little bit more, you know, mm-hmm. that's the job here, or we're gonna can you. So I
cool. What makes even the reason I asked is if it was a restaurant type of situation is because that makes it even harder. You know, people are there to eat, they're there to talk to their friends, and they're not necessarily there to see you, and so you know, now your job is to distract them for what they came there for.
Actually, this Chelsea Street Pub, they did kind of have followings.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, and it held like 200, 250 people a night. And yeah, it was like a circuit. You'd go back to these places like every 6 months. And so you could get a following, but it certainly wasn't a venue to play original stuff. I mean, played 3 or 4 originals a night, and then the rest was, you know, Police and David Allan Coe, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Man. Well, songwriting, at least in Nashville, you know, it's a community. People help mm-hmm. each other out. They root for each other. How does that compare to the comedy scene and that world?
Like I say, when I got here, I didn't know how I could let good things happen, but I couldn't let fantastic things happen. I'm the only guy who didn't show up for a writing appointment with Harlan Howard. Who does that? So it's kind
you're
of a
the guy.
Self-destructive type behavior. I did, you know, we grew up, you know, great art, you have to suffer. You know, Van Gogh cut off his ear, Hendrix dies, Joplin dies, Karen Carpenter, and, you know, a host of Jim Morrison. And so I thought you had to suffer, you know, to create good art. And so I went on about suffering.
Anytime I think that, I look to Keith Richards and say, oh, I guess I don't.
Yeah.
I guess I can just keep doing this.
Y'all see that thing on the internet that they're on Facebook where it shows a picture of Keith Richards and it says, I outlived Whitney and Michael Jackson. Who saw that coming?
Yeah, that's true.
So you mentioned your first open mic here in town. What do you remember about that first open mic as a comedian?
Oh, I it was an incredible humbling. You know, being a solo entertainer, and I'd play New Mexico and Colorado all the time. This was before I moved here. And then, and Texas, and all over Texas. And doing those 4 45-minute sets a night. they said, we're going to give you 7 minutes. And my ego said, 7 minutes? I can do that on my head. I've been playing 4:45, you know. And so I was going to take my guitar up there and just, you know, mess around for a little bit. So the manager of the club said, oh, you can't take your guitar up there because our headline comic is a guitar player. And though he's a better comic, you're a better guitar player. So you can't take your guitar up there. And so I went up there, and after 3 minutes, it was crickets. And it was a pain worse than it was. That's a bad pain. And so I got off the stage, and the manager came up, and she said, you know, Greg, 7 minutes means 7 minutes. It doesn't mean 3.5. And so at that point, it was I was humbled enough to kind of go check out what comedy was and learn that you come from your own truth and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, maybe you can elaborate on that. I mean, I've one friend in particular stands out in my mind who was just the funniest guy ever. I mean, he, no matter what situation, we'd be all standing around, he'd have people rolling. And, you know, people always said, oh, you should go do stand-up. And so he finally did one day, and a number of times, and failed horribly at it. I mean, there was a big difference between making people laugh just kind of one-on-one or in a group and being up on stage. What is that difference for people who think they might be funny enough to go do that?
You know, my brothers are funnier than me around a holiday table, you know, around Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. You know, they crack me up. And so that is a great question. And I guess it's timing. See, I stopped.
Tight.
It's timing, and it's just going through those years of learning and understanding. I mean, they say it takes 10 years to become a pretty decent stand-up comic.
Wow.
You know, some people do it in shorter time than that. Like, I worked in Jacksonville, Florida last week with Eliza Schlesinger, and she's 31, and she won Last Comic Standing at 25.
Oh, wow.
And the only female and the youngest person to ever win it. And she didn't even... She didn't understand driving for 8 and 9 hours to gigs because she bypassed that through what she says is, you know, a lucky break.
A reality show.
So she won that show and is on she's on a plane most of the time now. And, but I'd say 99.5% of all comics have to, you know, do the 25,000 to 30,000 miles a year, you know.
Man.
And work up to the good comedy clubs, because those first few years, you're playing a bowling alley that does comedy one night a week, and it's like a gauntlet, you know. It's pretty intense. But if
with all the hecklers and the crickets,
yeah, I don't have many hecklers anymore. Those are few and far between because I present a show that doesn't allow for that, mm-hmm. you know, because of 10 or 12 years of doing it. But also, Seinfeld, after his show, he made that documentary Comedian or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's the most successful comic in the history of the world. He goes out to do clubs again, and he gets heckled. And so that was just a sign to me, like, you know, every 6 days you're going to run into somebody. So don't think you can transcend it, because it's just part of the gig.
Every fifth day, every sixth day, somebody.
And usually if you don't direct them during the evening, then that can open up to a lot of stuff.
What does that mean?
Just, you know, just walk out there. And for me, I'm not a mean comedian or any of that. I'm kind of a love-based comedian. So if I'm feeling pretty good inside of myself,
mm-hmm.
You know, if I hadn't created any new shame or anything, if I'm walking out there with a pretty clean spirit, then the crowd is going to receive that, you know, and they're going to feel me having fun. And then that gives them permission to have fun. And I also can embrace the truth. I can talk about my age now. You know, I can walk out there, and if I see some older people, I can say, hey, it's nice to have people who remember Sears catalog Christmases and easy bake ovens and all of that. And again, what was the question?
I don't remember.
I think we were asking about ISIS, but we can't talk about that now. We do need to take a break. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We're here with Greg Hall. Stick around. We're going to be right back.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called It's Understood by the most recent CD from our guest here this hour, comedian, I was about to say John Galt. Greg Hall is here with us right now. Oh, man. Because that's the song we were going to play.
It's an Ayn Rand day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of, isn't it?
You were talking about setting up that first 7 minute set, and I was actually just yesterday I watched what was his name, the comedian Jay Moore has a new comedy special on Netflix, and I watched it, and he was talking about the first time he had to come up with 10 minutes. Uh-huh. It just kind of got me thinking, how long does it take to put a quality full set together when you finally said, okay, I think I got something that actually works?
I've been doing it about 10 or 11 years. I think like by the fifth year, of course I'm a procrastinator. So only in the last 3 or 4 years especially in the last two, have I really enjoyed walking out there instead of going, ooh, gee, wonder what's going to happen tonight. But now it's pretty fun, because I had an old guy who used to write for Bullwinkle and all this. He told me freedom is knowing your act. He said, if you have an act and you know it backwards and forwards, then you can step out of it
right,
and play with the people for a little while. And if it's not going like you want, you can step right back in into something you know
right,
works. But I like to do 10 minutes of improv and just talking to the people during the show, because that's fun, you know.
And I think one of the things, I think what Heino was asking earlier was Nashville has, there's such a support here for songwriters. I mean, we're all in the same boat with no paddle, and we're all trying to do the best we can, and everybody's lifting each other up. In comedy, do you have that same kind of camaraderie?
Yeah, you really do. You really do. There are, before I started closing shows, I would feature, which is, there's an MC, a feature, and a headliner.
Okay.
And the feature, the MC is 15 minutes. The feature is 30, and the headliner is 45 to an hour. So 30 minutes can be a lifetime as well.
Right.
You know, so through the, you know, over the years when I would feature, I had some great closing comics who were very giving, we don't critique each other's stuff too much, because that's like calling someone's kid ugly or something, you know.
Sure,
but
sure.
Mm-hmm. but you just kind of get the vibe and feel. And once you watch it enough, it's like a songwriter going out and seeing a bunch of great songwriters, you know. Once see enough of it, you understand it more. But there's a great support system in the comedy world when you're on the road.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Well, you mentioned earlier playing off the audience on any given night. I'm just curious, since you have a background as just a straight up performing songwriter, mm-hmm. What can a songwriter learn from that experience that you have there, where you have to play off the audience? Does that, any of that kind of translate over into the singer-songwriter type of thing?
Yeah, a little bit. The big thing I've noticed about the difference between a singer-songwriter and a comic, you know, I was funny between songs. I would say some funny things, and all of that, and be fairly entertaining. But as a singer-songwriter, I can get into my song, and I don't have to really look at the crowd too much.
With your eyes closed,
shut my eyes, and walk around stage, and all that. As a comic, I have to walk out there, and I have to let all of them look deeply. You know, I have to go out there and go, hey, how the heck are y'all? And just let them look into me. And that's kind of wild, you know, because I've got to let down my walls so they can come in instead of me, you know.
Musicians can be off in their own little world while they're playing their song, you know, or they're busy emoting, you know.
and I have to, and also inclusive, the word inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got this joke I can't tell here.
you have a lot of jokes.
I love that one.
Yeah, you said, let's keep it PG-13.
That's right.
Well, there goes my act. say I'm doing a show about, say I'm doing a bit about an exam that older people have.
Gotcha.
You know, over 40 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before I understood inclusive, I would just go right into the bit.
Mm-hmm.
But now I can look out in the audience and point out a 45 or a 50-year-old guy, and I said, hey, have you had that? And that way, and he'll shake it, yeah, hey, you know, so that made it inclusive. Then I'll look at some other guy that age and you know, ask it. And so now I've got them with me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, and also talking about the states you play in. You know, hey, anyone from Arkansas? And, you know, someone will go, hey, I'm from Little Rock. And it's like, yeah, Little Rock's beautiful, but, you know, I've been in northern Arkansas, and, you know, cornhole is not a beanbag game in northern Arkansas. That's all I'm saying. You know, so you can – yeah, so you just kind of make it as inclusive as you can.
Very good. Well, I would love to hear an inclusive song. You feel like playing something? Actually, you, sure. You can be emotive. You can do whatever you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, you can close your eyes. You know, that's all
right. That's right.
We were talking about, I wanted to play one comedy song and one serious
yeah,
song.
Sure. Perfect.
And we were talking about Richie Fagan.
Yeah.
Just a minute
yeah,
ago.
Good friend of ours.
Yeah, you better believe it. Oh, speaking of name dropping, you know, Liz Taylor told me to never name drop.
Right.
But I was at Tom Petty's house and Dave Matthews was making potato salad and he said it was okay. So, Fagan and I, Rich wrote this. Oh, the thing I was going to talk about. We got to make a shout out to Corey Pollard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
He's in California.
He's a good boy. He's a good boy, that Corey.
So Rich and I wrote this, and I took it to Roger Murrah, and Roger said, why don't you change these three words right here? And I said it. So Rich and I wrote it, and we had a ghostwriter named Murrah who came in. And
he's done all right for himself.
Not too shabby.
Let's see. It's called Someday. Well, you don't drink anymore, and I don't drink any less. It's not like it was before. Maybe it's all for the best. Well, I know you're ready to leave. I'm not gonna beg you to stay. Well, this time it's not about me, and I won't stand in your way. I let you go and hide this hurt with a smile. At least I'm lucky to know you were mine for a while. And someday I'll get it all together, become the man you want me to be. And someday I'll turn my life around, and then you'll see. And maybe when I do, someday you'll come back to me. I know you'll be all right. Somehow you've always been strong. I'm finally seeing tonight what a fool I've been all along. And I should have known when we met, I couldn't keep living this way. My love is so much more than a word. It's being willing to change. And it's not easy watching you walk away. And it's too late to do anything but just pray. And someday I'll get it all together, become the man you want me to be. And someday I'll turn my life around, and then you'll see. And maybe when I do, someday you'll come back to me. Go on and be free. I can't complain after all you've given me. And someday I'll get it all together, become the man you want me to be. And someday I'll turn my life around, and then you'll see. And maybe when I do,
Someday you'll come back to me. Oh, now maybe when I do, someday you'll come back to me.
Very nice.
Thank you all very much.
All right. Very cool.
So then you'll do a serious song in a little bit. Is that the plan?
Because that cracked me up.
Oh, man, that was hilarious.
I was wetting my pants. That was so funny.
That song's a little codependent, isn't it? Maybe if I get it together, you'll come back. Come back.
Oh, well. Talk for a second. You mentioned very briefly earlier on that you kind of had an accident that kind of propelled you into comedy. What talk about what happened there and what?
Well, I had some bladder issues for a long time. No, I'm sorry. That's a car accident.
Car accident.
Is that okay? What are you laughing about? Okay, there's no ladder issues. I had a car wreck in I guess 1999 and. Blew through the windshield and had one cut was 137 stitches right above my eyes and right at the base of my brow. And,
wow.
And luckily there was no additional brain damage when I got out.
No additional.
hospital. And, but that was, the thing I learned most, I mean, I didn't have a blinding flash on the road to Damascus. I mean, my life didn't completely change after that. But, you know, I'd been going through that entitlement mentality and self-destructive. And at that point, I realized that I would be complaining far less, you know, after that. I thought, you know, you can't walk around moaning and groaning all the time. And so that kind of snapped me out of that, which was really cool.
Right. Huh. And then since we go from that to now with this gig you're doing, every now and then, you're staying at a villa in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah. That's,
so
that's
let us hate you for a little while and talk about this gig you get.
That's a fun one. The Hotel Atlantis in the Bahamas. I work for Comedy Zone, mm-hmm. which is the largest booking agency and club conglomerate in the nation. And we've got like 40-something clubs. And one of our clubs is the Hotel Atlantis. And it's one show a night. It's like I go down, I walk from my villa to the thing at 9:30 and I'm done at 11. And it's just, it is awesome. And, the first year I played there, they put me in the hotel, which was just fantastic.
Sure.
Because I'm looking out the water. But, my comedy, we were talking about the Fellowship of Comedians, you know, my comedian friends who played there, before they said, man, dude, ask for a villa. They'll give you a villa if you ask for it. And so the second time I went, I asked for a villa and they said, sure. And so each time I go, it's 15 days.
Wow.
And I go again in March. And so I go about every 10 months, and sometimes even more frequent than that.
Yeah.
But it's a blast. It's really
cool. Right now there's songwriters all over town going, let me tell you about my wife. What can I do here?
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you one great thing about comedy that really kept me, that I'm really happy about. You know how hard, you know, I did this for 15 years, and I had 4 albums as a songwriter that sold over 9 dozen copies globally. So
wow.
Like,
wow. Hey.
Yeah, so,
wow. It went plywood.
Yeah. And so we know how hard it is to hustle to get people to come to our shows, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got hit songwriter friends, and, you know, send out 400 emails and get 62 people at the show. And then, you know, people who've had hits and stuff.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And I've been through that too. The great thing about comedy, I can go play the Comedy Zone in Jacksonville or something. And even though I've played it a lot now, you know, the first time I played the Comedy Zone in Jacksonville, they don't know me from Adam, and I got 250 people a show, two shows a night, four nights in a row. So it's really cool at this, you know, not being, you know, late 20s or 30s, it's really cool at my age to walk into a place and I didn't really have to, you know.
You're not begging people to come to the show.
Yeah, I'm not begging people to come to the shows. And, like, I'll play Tallahassee this weekend at the Comedy Zone and then Fort Myers Sunday. And the Tallahassee's a new club that Comedy Zone has. They don't know me, but it's going to be full. And they'll know me afterwards. And, you know, they buy shirts and they buy CDs. I sell more in merchandising during comedy clubs than I ever did musically.
Well, speaking of that, let's get a quick plug here. Your website, Greg Hall?
Yes, I was looking at these wonderful people outside the window here.
Yeah.
What a handsome group they are.
Website. What's your
what
website?
What were we talking about again?
My website is greghall.com. And Kit.
Oh, thank you. And they've been drinking.
Awesome. Right.
Okay, we're going to have to interpret.
We're
going to
take a break. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more on the Music Row Show with Greg Hall. Stick around. Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Hey, Greg, remember the last time this played on WSM?
Yeah.
This is a tune called Bite of the Apple. Greg Hall is our guest here this hour. Wonderful songwriter and comedian.
I had a little distortion on my guitar just then.
I think you did. I love people who can't, you know, see us right now because obviously we're on the radio, but he's got a great shirt on that says, "You Uncomplete Me." I love that.
Thank you.
Is that some of the merch you sell at the...
Yeah, that's some of the merch.
All right.
That you can find at greghall.com?
Yeah, we are going through a change at greghall.com, so I'm trying to put up little icons where you can go and buy the shirt and all that kind of stuff. But
right.
I'm so computer illiterate. My cell phone sold. It has a rotary dial.
Wow.
Where I am. And, but in the next couple of weeks, greghall.com, we're going to have all the merch on there and new pictures and video
and,
footage.
And new NEW pictures.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
That sounded weird for a minute.
Okay.
Hey, can you play us one more song?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that.
Do the serious one now. Yeah.
This was you know, I told you the first song, comedy song I wrote was Dairy Farm Girl that we can't do here.
We can't do it on the radio. Okay.
So I was watching Maury Povich.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah. And this was years ago, and I saw that 7 paternity tests, and we still can't find the daddy one, you know?
Uh-huh.
And this song just kind of came out. Your 5 kids can't read, and you're blaming the school, but they never heard the alphabet come out of you, and you ain't looked for a job. Well, probably never. Our taxes pay for a house you turned into a hovel. You ain't never seen the working end of a shovel. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid we're going to have to shoot you.
Oh, jeez.
God bless America while I stand and say the pledge. One nation under God is how it's supposed to be said. And good people died for over 300 years so we could live this dream. Well, I'm sorry, but you got to take one for the team. You're 35 years old and you can't swing a paintbrush. You can't roof a house or fix a leaky faucet. You can't repair a car and you can barely mow a lawn. And you steal from your mom all your friends you robbed. You worked harder on the street than if you had a job. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid we're going to have to shoot you. God bless America while I stand and say the pledge. When you burglarized the homes of working folks, you stepped across the edge. And good people died for over 300 years so we could live this dream. Well, I'm sorry, but you got to take one for the team. And that's what gets them at the comedy club. Everybody in rounds. If you've ever been on Spring or Montel or Ricky Lake, had a polygraph by Mari or let Judy judge your fate, been on a reality show like a Limidate or Big Brother. And if you park at the fire lane down at the grocer or tailgate on the freeway over and over, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid we're going to have to shoot you. God bless America while I stand and say the pledge. You're supposed to be kind to others, and that's what the good book says. And good people died for over 300 years so we could live this dream. Well, I'm sorry, but you gotta take one for the team.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank beautiful.
You. Jazz chord at the end there. Stepping outside the box.
Need to work on a turnaround now. Yeah. Hey, we're going to take one more break. We're here with Greg Hall. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Go to greghall.com. We'll be right back.
Twilight time and the world turns in. Cloudy moon with a crescent grin.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called Tunesmith by our guest here this hour, Greg Hall. We're just having a great old time. We actually just got a couple minutes left here. And, I wanted to know about you had a kind of a cool role in a movie called Super Tracker, The Nose Knows, didn't you?
No, but I can say yes.
Yes,
you
did.
That'll make the story flow.
That's another. I know.
Darn that Wikipedia.
Yeah. Can I? I'll ask one.
I had a role in a movie called Super Slacker.
That's the one I meant.
I just sat on my couch during.
I love that one too. I'm good at it too.
So one of my favorite documentaries lately is one called Bitter Buddha. Have you seen that at all? It's about a comedian in the L.A. comedy scene. Uh-huh. And it seems, looking at the parallel of the L.A. comedy world and Nashville songwriting world, I'm wondering if being Nashville-based, that might be an advantage for you. Do you think that? Because you're not in the maelstrom of it in L.A.?
Yeah, one great thing about being in Nashville, there are more comedy clubs in the 11 states around here than in all the other 49.
Really?
So
wow.
Between Florida and West Virginia, you know, the Georgias, the Carolinas, all that kind of stuff. Yes, we are. And the thing about L.A., first of all, it's like Nashville. You don't really get paid unless you shoot up. And
well, wait a minute. Until you've made it as a big name.
And so there'll be comics from L.A. Who are used to doing their 3 to 5 minutes because that's all they get at the improv. Mm-hmm. And what's cool is, I mean, we're on the road doing 45 minutes to an hour, mm-hmm. two times a night. And so that's really advantageous for comedians in the South. Cause if you can go to work for one of the agencies out of, you know, Charlotte or wherever, then you can go get 15 and 30 and 45 minutes a night, and get paid for it as well. But yeah, it's very advantageous living in the South and living in Nashville and being a busy but unfamous comic. Yeah, it's awesome.
Excellent. Now, Heine was telling me that you co-wrote a couple of books with Stephen King. Is that right?
Yes. Little Stevie and I were
the
Galapagos Islands. And I don't know. He'd done some mushrooms. It was just weird. And but I digest.
I'm sorry.
But I digest. So as a comedian, you mentioned you've got some material that you can't do here because, you know, it's a family-friendly stuff.
And I'm not filthy. I just...
No, you're not. You're not. But I'm just curious, as a comedian, is it easier to get a laugh that way to go blue or dirty?
Probably yes. It takes a lot of work to write clean stuff. Like the first joke I ever wrote, you have to come from your truth. And I had a house in 12 South and I was redoing it. And this was a long time ago. This was in 98 or something. And I was putting up a ceiling fan and the direction said, check the integrity of the fan.
Okay.
And so I didn't know what to do. So I took out my wallet and I laid it by the fan and I left the room for like an hour and a half. And so that was, you know, I came back in, my money was there and I hung it.
Okay. Good fan.
So it's fun. I like writing clean stuff. I'd like to do more, you know, wellness gigs, but apparently one has to have a modicum of wellness before they can actually, you know, get into
Give it time.
I think it's about time.
You'll get there.
Well, this has been fun. Once again, your website is greghall.com.
Greghall.com. Okay. And I think the email on that is greg@greghall.com.
Okay.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. My,
one G,
my sister's
right?
cousin's nephew's hairdresser helped me with that one.
Wow. Excellent. Wow.
And there's also reposemusic@yahoo.com. And I should have some CDs and shirts up within the next couple of weeks.
And so, people can come see you because you're just all over the place. Yes. So mainly the Southeast or...
Yeah.
Or the Bahamas. Go see him.
Or the Bahamas.
Atlantis in March.
Still hate you for that one. Yeah.
Sarajevo, Bosnia, a couple of years ago.
Nice.
Dubrovnik, Croatia, and Montenegro, and it was.
Did you get your own flak jacket for that?
No, the war was over, man.
Okay. He's like, got this great gig for you.
Hi, Noah and Scott, man. Thank you.
Thank you. GregHall.com. That's the website you want to go check out. And then you're going to want to stick around because we've got the triumphant return, sort of Max T. Barnes is going to be joining us here on the Music Row Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes.